Ken Davidoff, always of the New York Post. He joins us now on the line. Ken, are you down in Florida?
Yeah, Chris, I'm in Port St. Lucie.
Beautiful. I read your story on Diaz, very interesting. But I wanted to start with Tom Giordano, who I didn't know, but I think all of us understand how certain guys kind of define, especially when you're a longtime columnist like you are and you've been around the game a long time, and there are a lot of people that have spent their lives around a game, whether it's, it doesn't matter, hockey, basketball, it doesn't matter. But they, you know, they get in early as a kid, they want to be a columnist or a writer, and then, you know, next thing you know, you've 25 years, you've been coming to the ballpark. And Giordano, to me, is like one of these guys that really you always look forward to seeing. I could tell by reading your story that, you know, he's, as you said, a baseball lifer. Tell me what you know, you thought about with him and why you decided to write the column and share your relationship and his relationship with the game.
Yeah, T-Bone was a legend. Tom Giordano's nickname was T-Bone. He played for the 1953 Philadelphia A's, I believe it was, which is just remarkable when you think about it. I'm curious whether he was the last surviving member to play of a Philadelphia A's team.
Spent
his entire life in the game, first as a part-time scout working on Long Island, and then for the last 35 years or so as a full-time employee, both from the Orioles to the Indians, to the Rangers, to the Braves, and he spent most of his time in New York and in Florida. He was usually either at Yankee Stadium or Tropicana Field. I would see him at both places. Just the nicest man, and just a true love for the game. I didn't even mention it, but like, there was a time last year, like a Saturday in July, like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I remember I had the day off. I was with my wife. And my phone rings, and it's T-Bone. He wanted to ask me about Mickey Callaway. Was Mickey Callaway in trouble? So this is a guy who just lived and breathed in baseball, a wonderful man, and he did finally pass away a few days ago at age 93.
Yeah, and you had written, you saw him when he was about 91, and you were at the Scouts dinner in Great Neck, and he came up to you, and at 91 years old, what did he tell you?
Yeah, 91 years old, January of 2017. Looks at me and says, "You've gained weight." And I laughed. I said, "You're right. I think I've brought the game 5 to 10 pounds." And I said, "You're still the best scout in the game."
Yeah.
And I would see him in the dining room at Yankee Stadium after that. I always would laugh and say, "No dessert for me today." So, just the kind of guy, to know him was to love him.
Yeah, it just resonated with me, you know, and even when you said that when he saw you, he said, "Davidoff, hey, Davidoff, yeah. What are you?" And, you know, yeah. I mean, guys who have been around leagues and been to a lot of games, we all have seen guys like that, and we know how precious they are, and you know, some would say a dying breed or, you know, old school, whatever you want to call it, but they're special, and it's great that you shared that because I enjoyed reading it, and I never met him, so it was enjoyable reading about that. You wrote on Edwin Diaz, and I wondered if you enjoyed that because his competitiveness and his bravado, is it fun to interview players like that? I mean, he's a kind of a different cat, huh?
Yeah, no, he's a nice, respectful, humble kid. And I've done a lot of work on him when the Mets made a trade back in December, and I love the line. It was a scout who signed him for the Mariners. He said, "This kid has a big set of cojones," and I used it in the story at the time, and I figured, go up to Diaz and see what he thinks about that. And he embraced it. He loved it. He said, I do have a big set of cojones, and I look forward to demonstrating that to everybody. So I just had some fun with it. It also helps that I read the New York Post and I can get away with writing the word cojones about 5 times in an 800-word story.
Yeah, but it's also, I think, enjoyable for Met fans that like players like that. There's not a lot of guys with a lot of swagger. Guys are generally laid back, especially in baseball, and you know, they don't want a reputation of you know, they're concerned about their reputation. And I like the fact that when you said, "Hey, what about this?" He did embrace it. He didn't run from it or try to pretend he's someone he's not. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, and to be clear, this is not a showboat guy. He's fiery and flashy, but this is not a guy who has a reputation, for doing crazy stuff when he gets the save or anything like that. You know, Rafael Soriano had the untuck a few, which I enjoy that stuff, but that certainly can get you enemies within the game. Edwin Diaz is not that kind of guy.
Ken, it seemed that New York fan base sort of maybe overreacted to DeGrom's comments. What did you make of them? And what do you, I mean, that probably doesn't surprise you, but maybe you don't agree. Maybe you think they didn't overreact. What are your thoughts?
No, I wrote about it that day. I was at the press conference. Look, this is, it's a leverage thing. He's just tweaking the med. Jacob DeGrom is not pulling himself out of a game. He's not going to shut himself down in September. He's not doing any of that. It was just for keeping his options open. As a guy who has done everything right, as a New York Met, you know, low maintenance, high performance. And last year, through that nightmare, he never complained once about his lack of run support. So in a February news conference, to just simply not rule out taking some proactive measures to manage his workload, I mean, for people to go nuts, shame on them. I mean, this was nothing more than a tactic.
And you wrote that he earned the right to tweak the Mets a little bit, but I was trying to think to myself, what's the upside for him? How do you view it? Why did you think, instead of saying, you know, I've never even thought about that, he offered that, you know what, I'll have to look at it. I'll have to, you know, talk about it with my agents or whatever. What do you think the upside was for him when he shared that?
To be able to look in the mirror that night, Chris, and feel good about himself, that's pretty good upside.
Okay, so you felt like he was just being honest, period, and nothing more, nothing less.
I'm not being honest, but just showing a lot. You know, we just talked about Diaz, cojones, right? DeGrom showed some cojones with that comment. So, you know, Jacob DeGrom is earned the right to as I said, to tweet the Mets and to be a little fiery and then even a little controversial.
You wrote that, and you are not alone. So many others have that you believe, because he said it, that he really wants to be a Met. Why are you convinced that he wants to stay here?
Well, first of all, there is a business side, if you will, a tactical side. He's 30 years old, and as I'm pretty sure you know, I mean, 30 is the new 50 in baseball. You know, so these guys over 30 years old don't get paid as handsomely as they once did. And so by the time he becomes a free agent, he's going to be 32. So it does behoove him to sell high off his remarkable Cy Young season. Beyond that, I've been around him since he debuted in 2014. This is a guy who was extremely comfortable in New York with all the scrutiny that comes with it. You remember back in 2015, Game 5 against the Dodgers, he pitched brilliantly in that playoff game, and he just appears very comfortable and happy as a New York Met.
So in terms of going somewhere where he might have a better chance of winning, the way John Tavares did, for example, from the Islanders, you don't see that as likely. Let's put it that way.
I don't. Look, I do think what the Mets did over the winter helped recruit him. I'm not convinced the Mets are slam dunk contender, but they're certainly an improved entity. And I think Jacob DeGrom likes Brody Van Wagenen. He does him very well as his former agent. And I think that move makes the Mets more appealing to Jacob DeGrom.
Do you have a prognostication on how this all plays out?
I do. I think he'll sign a deal by the opening day deadline.
Wow. That would be make Met fans very happy for sure. What do you make of Harper and Machado still being out there for baseball and collective bargaining agreements and all the chatter that we hear now about, you know, players being unhappy? What do you put it all in a blender? What comes out for you?
What comes out for me is it's a disaster for baseball. It's just an off look. And you just mentioned Tavares. You know, can you imagine if the NHL season started, or even training camp, I should say, to be fair. Okay, John Tavares hasn't signed yet. You know, can you imagine the NBA? LeBron James hasn't signed yet. I know we're starting training camp here, but, you know, LeBron James and Kyrie Irving haven't signed yet. So it's a terrible look for the game. Everyone has to take some blame. The players have to take some blame. The agents have to take some blame. And the teams have to take some blame. These are superstar players. And they should be signed by hook or by crook.
Are you? It's interesting to me that the fans see how much the players make, and despite the tremendous escalation in value of pro sports franchises, I saw Forbes said the Knicks went up 11% from 2017 to 2018 in value, and we all know what kind of year they had. So, despite the escalation of value, it seems like the fans are like, hey, you're making enough money. Stop your whining and play. And the players are like, hey, these guys are making more than they ever have before. They got to share more. Is that the basis of where we are right now in terms of, you know, Rams butting heads, butting horns?
Yeah, but I think it's a little more complex than that, Chris. I interact a fair amount with fans, and a lot of them take the player side. You know, a lot of fans are livid with the Yankees for not signing Machado or Harper or both. So there's anger on all sides. I also want to say I don't think those Forbes valuations have any value because they're just, you know, stats in the dark.
Oh, okay, fair enough. What did you think of Severino's deal?
Team friendly, but I get it. He can rest easy now. Look, it would be easy for you or me to say, hey, he should have bet on himself and he would have made more money over the next 4 years on the $40 million he's getting. But this is a guy who grew up poor in the Dominican Republic, and now he has $40 million guaranteed to him, and he has earned that, so good for him.
It would appear to me that this is a good spring training to write, that there is plenty of interest. The Yankees won 100 games, and we know about, you know, Sanchez and Bird not really participating the way the Yankees thought they would, and there's just a lot of issues, a lot of great pieces that Aaron Boone has to try to put together, but a difficult puzzle day-to-day to figure out. And the Mets have, you know, now young players like McNeil and Alonso, and at least Alonso at some point, we would think, and Rosario trying to fit in with some veteran players. So to me, picking up the post and reading David Off and Sherman, et cetera, is something that a lot of people will want to do because I think you'll have a lot of stories. Does it look like a fruitful spring?
Sure. That's your best prediction ever, Chris. Thank you. I hope you're right. I've been in Mets camp now for 5 days, and I've had plenty to write and plenty more, and I'll be shifting over to the Yankees sooner than later. And I agree. There's plenty of storylines in both New York teams, And it is a good thing because there are many teams that are just dead. You know, they're clearly not gearing up for this year and looking down the road and are extremely boring.
Yeah, not really. I mean, I thought the Yankees were that way 3 years ago. When it was just Teixeira coming back, Beltran coming back, A-Rod coming back. It was all older players who we'd already seen before, and it was a matter of, are they going to stay healthy? I don't know. All right, let's move on. It's much different now with second-year players like Torres and Andujar, et cetera, and a revamped bullpen. Interesting. I mean, the whole thing's interesting. Sabathia said goodbye today. You think he's a Hall of Famer? You giving it any thought?
I haven't given a ton of thought, but yeah, he's very much in the conversation. And I know he had the press conference. He's been saying he's retiring since he resigned in November. So I know some people were trying to take journalists a credit for that this past week, but he's been saying that himself since November.
Yeah, I don't think it was a news conference. It was a publicity conference is really what it was.
Yeah, which he is entitled to. And what the charity thing he's doing is amazing, not surprising, because he's an amazing guy.
Mickey Callaway, what about the difference between him this year as opposed to last year?
Well, TBD. I mean, he clearly was a little over his head last year, a little overmatched just in terms of doing the job overall. And we'll see now how he does. There's no doubt he's on the hot seat. He knows that. The man who hired him, Sandy Alderson, is now working for the Oakland A's. The GM, his new GM, Brody Van Wagenen, is clearly a man of action and has arranged this team in an all-in fashion. So if there was a slow start, I don't think there would be a hesitation to jettison Mickey.
All right, something to keep an eye on. Ken, good conversation. We appreciate it as always. Safe travels down there.
Thank you, Chris.
There you go. Ken Davidoff of the New York Post.